Welcome to Shift with CJ. I'm your host CJ, and together we will explore the areas of health, human performance, biohacking, psychology, and much more that will inspire you to become the best version of yourself.
What's really going on in the left and the right side of our brains, and how does this thing work?
I wasn't seeing a lot of ids and egos and superegos in my patients, but what I was seeing was two different personalities. So the person who's talking is in the left brain. Speech is in the left brain.
Normally, yeah. When we associate the left and right brain, right? For example, if I'm looking to increase my logic and analytical thinking, which is governed by my left brain, should I cover my left eye and look through the right so it has an opposite response the brain?
People are more symptomatic on one side and less symptomatic on the other.
The emotional side of the brain like flares up or has more activity when you are a bit sleep deprived and your brain is confused on what's going on. For the everyday person, could that also trigger some sort of a negative experience?
External events can influence either side. All of a sudden, the depression, anxiety go away and they're all business and the end of the problem.
Welcome back to another episode of the Shift with CJ podcast, where we dive deep into biohacking and psychology, neuroscience, and these transformative ideas that can actually help you shift your perspective and elevate your life. Today, I am super excited because we have someone whose research has been doing like groundbreaking stuff on how we see the world, trauma, brain health, and so much more. Our guest on the show today is Dr. Frederick Schiffer. He is a best-selling author, psychologist, a psychiatrist, a professor at the Harvard Medical School. Dr. Schiffer is amazing because he's pioneered what he calls dual brain psychology. It's, in a way, it's a new way of understanding how trauma affects anxiety, or how trauma, anxiety, depression, and all of these things are in two hemispheres of our brain. Now, I will let him explain that even further. So without much ado, please welcome Dr. Schiffer. Dr. Schiffer, how are you today?
Hi. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you for joining us all the way from Boston. It's really early for you.
Okay. It's a long walk. Yeah.
Okay. So Dr. Schiffer, let's get right into it. All your work, or most of your work, and you, the way you're talking about this dual brain psychology. Can you explain to us, A, what does that mean? Like, what's really going on in the left and the right side of our brains? And how does this thing work?
Okay. It began with early in my career as a psychiatrist. I was trained at Harvard and in psychoanalysis. I wasn't seeing a lot of ids and egos and superegos in my patients, but what I was seeing was two different personalities, that when they came in, they were sort of id-like. They were conscious. The id is supposed to be unconscious. And these were conscious people who were immature and impulsive and symptomatic. As they got better, they became more ego-like, or more mature, wiser, healthier, and then they'd regress again, and they'd be back to this immature state. I didn't quite know what to do with that, but I just observed that. And then I was on vacation in England, and I was rereading a book about the split brain studies, and I didn't understand this when I was in college and read them, that the real importance of the split brain studies, which are studies that took place in 1940 and then in the 1960s, in which people with intractable epilepsy that was intolerable and ruining their lives. They couldn't drive, they couldn't function, couldn't work. And they did a radical surgery where they cut the connection between the left brain and the right brain. And what they found was that they created two minds. They were like two different people. I went out to California and did the last split brain study. This was in the 1990s. And what I did was the first psychological inventory of the two brain hemispheres. I asked questions of a psychological nature of the two hemispheres. And the way I did that it's known that the eyes are connected to the brain, such that the lateral visual field is connected to the opposite brain. It hits the light comes in. Say if I show here to the right the left lateral visual field, it goes. If I'm a split brain patient, it's only seen by my right brain. My right brain is mute. And so the person who's talking is in the left brain. Speech is in the left brain. So the person says, I can't see it. But the individual can take his left hand, which is controlled by his right brain, and reach into a box and pull out the item. So say it's a chess piece. And he easily reaches in the box and pulls out the chess piece. If you ask the left brain to do it with his right hand, he can't. He doesn't know what piece to pick out, and so I put two words on each side of the screen, and one word might be happy, and the other might be dishonest, and there were positive and negative words, and we rotated them so that each side got all the words, and what we found was that in this one individual, his right brain had a high opinion of himself. And he scored high on positive words and low on negative words. His left brain had a low opinion of himself and scored low on positive words and higher on negative words. And then there was another patient who scored similarly. And the way they scored was there were pegs, and they used their fingers on each hand, and we had graduate students watch their fingers, and they pointed to pegs, meaning none to extreme, and that was the way they answered the questions. So the question might be, how much do you feel happy, or how much do you feel dishonest, and they would answer with their fingers. And so the second patient scored similarly on both sides. But when we were setting up the equipment, I was talking with him and asked him about his past. And he said he had been bullied as a child. And I said, does it bother you? He said, no, it happened so long ago. And his right hand, which is signing for his left brain, which is talking to me, indicated that he was not upset by the bullies. He answered none. For all the I've inserted about 10 bully questions, but his left hand signing for his right brain indicated that he was extremely upset by the bullies, and we published the article, and we felt that that his right brain was still upset by the bullies. And this is what I see in my practice, that old traumas, like old soldiers, like MacArthur said, they don't die, they just fade away. That old traumas tend to stick around without the person being aware of it. And that's a lot of what my work is about. So I later discovered a German group that was purporting to show movies to one brain hemisphere, the left or right brain, in normal people, people who had an intact connection between their left and right brain. And he was getting different emotional responses, and all the bad responses were not in the right brain where I expected them to be. They were mixed. So I decided he had a $1 million machine that tracked eye movements, a massive computer screen, and I didn't understand till I read it about five times what he was doing. And I realized he was showing Movie. It was a movie of somebody getting shock treatment, so it was a very upsetting movie, and he was showing it to one lateral visual field or the other, and so he was doing what Roger Sperry, who won the Nobel Prize, did in split brain patients. He showed images to one lateral visual field or the other, and so I decided to put my hands up like this, and I felt I could do the same thing, and I then looked over here, and I didn't feel any different. But I went to the office, and my first patient that day was a Vietnam veteran who had PTSD, who was doing much better. And I asked him to hold his hands up, and he's looking out his left visual field, which is stimulating his right brain. And he says, "That plant behind you looks like the jungle." So he's having a flashback, and he's back in Vietnam. And so I quickly said, "Well, look out the other side." And he smiled. He said, "No, that's a nice looking plant." And
Wow, that's amazing.
so I was on 2020 with this a number of years ago, and a patient who I hadn't met before came to our laboratory, and we had taped goggles where there was tape in the middle, and you had to look out one lateral visual field or the other. And on one side, he felt very relaxed. On the other side, he got upset and anxious. And the moderator from ABC News said, "Well, what are you feeling?" And he said, "I feel like going to war." And this is typical. I see this in about 55% of patients in my practice. And another 30% have differences, but they're not so dramatic. They feel more relaxed on one side. And the side that is better, it tends to be a trait. It tends to stay that way for their duration. Sometimes it switches, but usually 95% of the time it's the same. And then about 15% of the people didn't have any difference between their sides.
That is fascinating. That is so fascinating.
And so I have what I call dual brain psychotherapy, where I talk with two people in one brain. And
That's interesting.
I use special sunglasses that I developed that simulate one, let more light in one lateral visual field than the other. And we also have an fMRI. Now, an fMRI is a, everybody knows what an MRI machine is, and an fMRI has special software that measures blood flow in the brain. And blood flow is an index of brain activity. The more activity, the more the blood flows to that side or that area of the brain. And fMRIs are used in neuroscience, but they don't really reveal much generally over the decades that they've been used. They usually present kind of a measles picture, and it's hard to interpret. But in my study, when people look to the left visual field for 30 seconds, and then the right visual field, then repeated it, and then when we took seven people who were in the study and crunched the data, when they looked to the left, their right brain had a massive increase in blood flow compared to the other side. The other side looked relatively dark, like a blackout. And then when they just looked out the other visual field, the opposite brain lit up. And so with this simple technique, I graduated to using an envelope. So if I cover one eye and the middle of the other eye, I can stimulate the opposite brain hemisphere. And if you want to try this, we can see if you have a response or not. Do you have an envelope handy?
I don't have an envelope, but I have a book if that works. But before that,
Yeah, that'll work.
I wanted to
Yeah.
ask you one thing. So normally when
Yeah.
we associate the left and right brain, right? So a lot of people know that the left brain is associated more with logic, language, analytical thinking, and the right is more
Right.
creative, intuitive, and more emotional. So if
Right.
I, for example, if I'm looking to increase my logic and analytical thinking, which is governed by my left brain, should I cover my left eye and look through the right? So it has an opposite response in the brain.
I don't find that to happen. So what I find is that people are more symptomatic on one side and less symptomatic on the other. And they can speak no matter which visual field is blocked or they're looking out. And they can move both sides of their body. So we know that neurologically, if someone has a stroke in their right brain, they get paralyzed on their left side. That if they have a stroke in their left brain, that's where speech is, they become aphasic and they can't speak, if it depending on the area of the speech center, they can't understand language. And motor systems and speech systems are definitely lateralized. But this, what we're doing, doesn't affect that. In other words, this is a different property, and so the left brain may be more logical. So you have to cover one eye and the middle of the other eye.
Okay, so I am covering one eye and the middle of the
Yeah,
other eye with this book
yeah,
for people who are looking at this on video.
yeah, and so I want you to think of something upsetting
Upsetting?
in your
Okay.
life. Yeah. And I want you to measure, say, how much distress you feel from 0 to 10.
Not so much, to be honest. Like normally I would be
Okay.
more stressful.
So would you say 1 or 2 or none?
I would say between 2 to 3.
Okay. Now I want you to do the same thing looking out the other side.
Okay, now I'm switching my book to the other side, covering this
Yeah.
eye and
And
thinking about the same
move half
situation.
the other eye, half your left eye. Like cover half your left eye. Okay.
Half
Yeah,
my
there
left
you
eye
go.
is covered.
Okay. Good.
Now think
And
about the
I
same
want you to think of
situation.
the same upsetting thing.
Now, I don't know if this is placebo or not, but what I feel is on the left eye, I feel more emotional.
Yeah.
So basically, I was thinking about just so people who are listening or watching this have a context. I have a dog and I love dogs, and I was imagining someone killing a dog on purpose. So this is something that is very disgusting, and I wouldn't stand it. And I would generally be
Right.
upset, either angry or sad or one of those emotions. When I covered my left eye and I was looking at it from the right eye, it did not trigger me as much as I would think it would. But when I covered my right eye and I was looking at it from my left eye, it did spike up an emotion. I wouldn't say it's so much, but again, we're in a recording podcast, so maybe
Right.
the
What would you say from 0 to 10?
0 to 10, I would say more so 2 on the lowest from the right and maybe 5 on the left.
Well, that's a big difference. Okay,
Yeah.
so that's more than
It was
100%.
noticeable.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's noticeable.
Yeah.
And this would change if, like, for example, if I was imagining something horrible that happened in my past. You mentioned bullying before. I was obese as a kid. I was bullied as a kid. And I also think that, you mentioned the word trauma, and from the work that I read of yours, like trauma is also emphasized. It could be PTSD or something else. But I
Right.
think most of the people, especially in this part of the world, they associate trauma with something big, like a terrible accident, or they lose someone. But you talk about trauma in many different ways. It doesn't have to be the trauma with the capital T. It could be small, everyday things like bullying, which happened when I was in school. I'm talking about like 20 years ago. And probably if you ask me now, it doesn't affect me so much. But did it do at that point? Yeah, a lot.
Now, I wonder if you do that visual thing again, and think about the bullying, see if it does bother you more on one side than the other. So you're looking at your
I'm looking out of my right eye
right
now.
visual field. Yeah. So it's actually not your right eye, but your right lateral visual field.
Okay, right
Because a
lateral
lot of
visual
people look
field.
out the whole eye, and that goes to both hemispheres, and you don't get a response.
Oh, okay, so you're looking exactly at the half, right? Okay.
Yeah, it's got to be half. Yeah.
Okay, so.
And think about the bullying. Did you have any reaction?
A bit, but not so much.
So how would you score it from 0 to 1?
Again, I would not score it more than 3.
Okay. And
Let's
look out the other
decide.
side. Yeah. And think about the bullying. And don't
It's
put it so much.
strange. It's strange. This time, I'm not having a big reaction on my left side. It's if that was 3, this would be like 1.
Okay.
But also I'm so excited to talk to you. I don't know if the excitement is changing things.
Okay. Well, usually I would expect it to be much higher on one side, and it can be either side that has the negative thing, and it's I call it what my first book is called Of Two Minds, and what I mean by that is that if someone is having a conversation with me, looking out one side, say their troubled side, I'll look critical, like maybe their mother was, and that might be a trauma, as you point out, that I think that severe having an alcoholic father who beats mother and throws the kid down the stairs
I had
repeatedly.
that,
Okay,
okay.
well,
We're gonna do
that's
many experiments later.
yeah, well, that's serious, but you may not have that in mind. In other words, that you may be thinking, oh, it happened a long time ago, and it's not important. But that's pretty severe. A lot of times, it's not even that severe. It's more maybe a distant father who's not very involved and is sort of rejecting, or a mother. I have a lot of men whose mothers said, "Oh, you're a loser," when the kid was 3 years
Criticizing them.
old.
Yeah,
Yeah.
criticizing them or with friends or like your teacher or someone who didn't
Right.
see you in the right light. And that kind of stays with a lot of people. I meet so many people who say every time you remind them of an emotion that kind of happened in their childhood. And they're like, oh my God, I cannot, like, they start shaking sometimes. So those memories can be really strong.
Yes,
Or they
and
get
then
angry.
what happens with that early trauma is that you go to school and it's harder to concentrate, and then the teacher gets angry with you, and so the trauma then snowballs, and then and maybe peers are getting critical because you're not doing well on the athletic field or in the classroom. And so you wind up making friends with other people who are having trouble. And then when a person gets to be an adolescent, they start skipping school or drinking and then they might fail out of college. And each of these things is a great trauma. And if they become addicted, then that's a great trauma. And they feel that they're an addict. And I like to say, I don't have any addicts in my practice. I have trauma victims. And that the addiction is an attempt by the immature side to deal with the trauma. And the immature side almost always picks solutions that bring on more trauma and more distress. And when I see people in my practice, they're often using drugs, and they might be homeless and feel really that their lives are failed, and they have no idea that they have a healthy part to them. And we can elicit that with the envelope. We can, and I also have another way of stimulating the hemisphere. And right now we're doing a $2.5 million NIH grant
Is
with
this the LED
NIH.
lights?
Yeah, it's an LED that we developed at MGH, and we put it over the forehead on one side. Say my left brain is my positive hemisphere, and it's just a 4 minute treatment, and the FDA has determined it has no significant risk, and we haven't seen any side effects from it, and.
Can you talk to us about how it works? Like, so basically it's a light that goes on the forehead, and is
Yeah.
the light
And it
pulsating
goes.
at a certain frequency, or it's like
Yes.
moving the blood flow into a certain part of the brain, maybe the logical center or the emotional center or an area that needs some help?
The light goes, and the reason we picked it is near infrared light, it goes through the skull
Oh, no
and into the
way.
brain. And it's called photobiomodulation,
Interesting.
and it does a lot of good things to the brain, but I don't think that's what I'm doing. In other words, it stimulates energy production, decreases inflammation, increases blood flow. It does a lot of good things to the brain, and it doesn't do anything that is known to be harmful to the brain.
It's interesting because I don't know if you know this, but I have at one of my companies, Biohacken, we have photobiomodulation products, and
I see.
we developed a cap with red and near infrared light, but these are the LED lights are placed at certain parts, different areas of the brain. It's designed to stimulate the brain and do some sort of a brainwave entrainment where we can teach the brain slowly on how to go into, like, 10 hertz frequency or like a 40 hertz gamma brainwave frequency. But I did not know these LED lights were like near infrared. The ones we use is for red and near infrared. It was developed for like athletes and people who are like executives, but most of the people now use it for hair loss because it's got an
Right.
effect on increasing the blood flow in the hair follicles, and then it stimulates hair growth. This is fascinating. I did not know this.
Yes. But you're simulating both sides, and so what I do is simulate one side, and in this grant we're treating fentanyl addiction, and it's our third clinical trial. And we in our first two trials got great results, and so the FDA has given us a breakthrough designation, and that's why we have this big grant from it's from NIH and the National Institute for Drug Abuse,
Congratulations.
and half the people are getting a sham treatment. And I don't know who's getting active in sham, but I do know that if I rank the people according to how much they've decreased their fentanyl, the top half have an 80% decrease in fentanyl, and a lot of them have stopped their fentanyl. The bottom half have a 16% decrease, and some of them have gotten worse. And so they may be getting the. I'm hoping that the bottom half are getting sham and the top half are getting active treatment. And I think that that's probably true because it's hard to treat fentanyl with a placebo.
Yeah,
I know.
I would ask you, like, what do you think is the mechanism of action there? Is it that,
Okay. So, what I think, again, I mentioned that there are known to be a lot of good things that happen with the brain, but not in 4 minutes. Okay, so someone can get a 4 minute treatment, and you'll notice the when we did the eye maneuver, that takes place in seconds. So your response it was within a few seconds, with the light, we give a 4 minute treatment. Usually, the person feels the difference in about 2.5 minutes. And it's a special light that we developed. It's very intense. It's 240 milliwatts per centimeter square. And so your lights are probably 10 milliwatts or something like that. And it's in one location.
So it's concentrated.
So we're trying to stimulate the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex. Mm-hmm. So we put it over that. And the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex is a hub for the brain. It's an association area. And so I'm trying to stimulate a mind. So I think that what I'm doing is having actually a quantum effect. Now, I don't know that, but I think that that I think I'm stimulating brain information that becomes conscious, and that creates a conscious mind that has a different body of information. It's a more positive body of information, and I'm able to make it conscious. If I put the light on the other side, just like with the visual thing, the person will have a more negative outlook. They won't go into a catastrophe if you put it on the negative side, but they'll have the symptoms that they came in with.
Does everyone have a different negative and a positive side, or is it standard for everyone?
It's pretty standard in terms of what I've seen over decades, that rather than it being more logical or more artistic, it's more symptomatic and neurotic versus healthy and sensible. I had an experience where it was the first time, it was about 5 years after I wrote my first book, and I was on a vacation in Italy, and my wife was driving. And we had a 5-hour drive to an apartment that we rented, and I was feeling uncomfortable. My wife is a good driver, and she was driving, and I felt like we were going to have an accident. And I noticed after about an hour that the road was really safe. It was like any road, in the U.S. that I drive on, And then after a while, I decided to put my hands up and block my vision. And I was looking out my right lateral visual field, which would stimulate my left brain. And all of that anxiety went away just immediately. And I looked out the other side and I got a vavoom of anxiety. And then we got to the apartment and it had a balcony looking over a road. So I'm up on a balcony. And if I looked out my right, my left,
lateral vision.
If I looked out my left lateral visual field, stimulating my right brain, I got very anxious, and so the I'm looking at cars on the road. It wasn't a highway, it was a back road, but it was, and I felt like the cars were sort of going to jump up and hit me. And I said, well, that's crazy, you know. And I looked out the other side and felt perfectly safe, and it was a normal road. And I had to wrestle with myself for about a day. I said, do I want to ruin the vacation? Do I want to be crazy or sane? And I was able to prevail, but it, with all my experience and writing a book and it turned out, I realized a few years later, not at that time, that it had to do with some trauma that I had experienced, that being in Italy brought up, and so that was the first time that I had experienced the lateral visual effect. And I use it now. If I'm under stress, I can get an envelope and look out. And I use the light On most days, I try and use it every day. Sometimes I'll miss a day, and I think it's good for cognitive enhancement. And
That's so interesting. Could it, were you at any point when this thing was happening, these episodes of feeling scared or nervous or anxiety,
yeah.
was your sleep the same as it is all the time? Because here's something that I'm thinking. I have experienced something similar, especially when I've made some long travels. But one of the things that I also think is that sometimes I cannot sleep on the airplane. Then there is jet lag. And, then we know that the emotional side of the brain like flares up or has more activity when you are a bit sleep deprived and your brain is confused on what's going on. And could, for the everyday person, could that also trigger something, some sort
Yeah.
of a negative experience?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. There was a movie with Steve Martin and Lily Tomlin. Do you know who they are?
No, but I will look them up.
Okay. Well, Steve Martin is a comedian, and he's in the US. He's sort of retired now, but he was at the height of his popularity. And was very famous, and Lily Tomlin was also a comedian, so this story is that Lily Tomlin is meditating with her guru, and there's a terrible accident that the humming bowl slips out of the guru's hands and tumbles down a huge flight of stairs in Manhattan, and as a result, Lily Tomlin's mind gets embedded in Steve Martin's brain. And so you have Steve Martin as the embodiment, and Lily Tomlin wants to go downtown, and Steve Martin wants to go uptown. So he's going like this back and forth, and she's screaming at him, she wants to go here, and he's trying to resist. Now, if someone came by and encouraged Lily Tomlin, and then she would have gotten stronger. And so if something encourages the negative side, say that someone is inducing somebody to use fentanyl, that'll arouse the negative side, and it actually becomes stronger. So if Lily Tomlin was yelling loud enough, she might have gotten her way and going downtown. That the two sides can compete. And they often, when a patient comes in, the two sides are often fighting and trying to kill each other, or they don't acknowledge each other. And what I do in dual brain psychotherapy is to get them to cooperate and to treat the trauma in the trouble side and use the healthy side as a co-therapist to help treat the trauma. So I think that you're right that external events can influence either side. In other words, if let's say somebody wakes up and they're anxious and depressed, and they get a phone call from work, and there's a problem that they have to solve, all of a sudden the depression, anxiety go away. And their business, their old business, and they attend to the problem.
The brain shifts
And
the focus.
it'll strengthen the mature side, it'll arouse the mature side. So that these two minds are influenced by outside events and influenced by each other. And I'll teach the patient how to talk with the troubled side. And he can influence it. And the troubled side often batters and abuses the healthy side.
Now, just because you mentioned the guru and meditation, I wanted to
Yes.
bring up another thing. Like in the Eastern, I'm originally from India, and in the Eastern philosophy, especially when it comes to yoga and yogis culture, they have a similar idea. They talk about two sorts of like energy channels in the body, which also goes up to the brain, which is the feminine side. is Ida, which is more creative, more lunar energy. You'll hear all these things, and like these are the terminologies. And the male
Right.
style is more masculine, more logical. And the goal is that these two are always fluctuating. No one has like a complete balance. Like if you're a guru, you probably have like a complete balance, where there's a center point. But in almost all of us, there are these opposite yin and yangs that are working all the time. And
Right.
one could, in certain situations, get more agitated, can be more anxiety prone. And this is what we see today. Like you mentioned, external events, like even having substances, like having 2 cups of coffee instead of one, or, just looking at your screen for long amounts of time with the blue light and how it messes the circadian rhythm. And then there's a downstream effect on different things. But you said something even interesting. The two sides of the brain. I can't remember from who, but years ago I read that yes, of course, you have these different sides of the brain, and it also helps if you name them. If you name, like my name is CJ, and I would say CJ1 or CJ2, just for simplicity. And this is when you know that CJ1, as in this part of your brain, is becoming more dominant right now. And while you don't get involved in the emotion, this allows you to take a step back and observe the different parts of the brain and how they are communicating with each other. So one part is being nasty or trying to kind of like sabotage the other one. You could just say, "Hey, CJ1, I see what you're doing. Like, I want, you some." I don't know if it makes sense, but it kind of like helps you even better than being a victim of the situation and saying like, "I'm so stress prone and my day isn't getting good." If you take a step back and you say, "Okay, this part of my brain seems a bit overactive right now. Can I, with meditation or just by talking or, covering one eye, can I influence one of these?" What's your thought on that?
Yes, I agree with you, and I have Fred and Freddie,
Okay, good.
and most of my patients, I have two names. Usually, their regular name, and I put an IE, for a diminutive term for the child. There's more. I don't like the term "inner child" because I think it's overused and kind of devalued. But it is. But what I'm talking about is an inner child, and I think to give them two different names, I think is a reality. They're two different people, and I think it makes it easier to talk to them. And so I'll have a conversation with Freddie, and it might be 3 o'clock in the morning. If I wake up and I go downstairs and get a snack, and I sit down and talk to Freddie, and during the day, Fred needs to be in charge, and the light treatments stimulate the mature side, and the envelope can help in that regard.
Yeah, the envelope is really good. It gives everyday people access, because if someone is listening to this or someone is looking at us on video, that is such a low-hanging fruit that everyone can do no matter where they are, and they don't have to
Right.
have access to sophisticated technology. Of course, the technology is so much more faster and has much more results. But let's say someone's just having a bad day, and if they have the power to just choose something, like I had that book right here where I had my
Yeah.
notes, and if they could do it right in the moment, it's a good thing for them, because like you said, the snowballing effect, we don't realize it, but for the average person, their boss is stressing them out, then they have a stressed out day, they miss the gym, they eat junk, then they go have a fight with their partner, then they have a fight with their kids, kids are angry, kids develop trauma. So this is like, it starts off with the smallest thing, and
Right.
if we give people the opportunity or the knowledge, and I'm so grateful that you're putting all of this great work out there, that yeah, you can use advanced things, but like start off with the simple thing. It's
And also, I have my book that I put up here to plug my book. This just came out. This is my
Shout
second
out,
book.
everyone, please check it out.
It's called Goodbye Anxiety, Depression,
PTSD.
Addiction, and PTSD, The Life-Changing Science of Dual Brain Psychology. And it's an easy read. So a lot of people might be intimidated by a book, you know, that has to do with science, and but the science is presented in a very easy to understand way, and there's a chapter on self-help and there are narrative fictional descriptions of actual therapy sessions, so people tell me that it's an easy read.
That's good. We will put the link in the show notes so everyone who can buy it, they can buy it from US or anywhere internationally. Now, I want to ask you a question. You've been with Harvard for such a long time, and we know like really interesting things come out of there. Are they working on something secretive or like not secretive? Let's say like, do you know about like projects, studies, devices that have been developed right now that could change the way our mental health is in the future? I know that they're doing a lot of things in longevity and, you know, the future of biology, psychology, and neuroscience and all of these things combined. So do you know of anything that is exciting for you?
I don't.
Okay.
I think that when I started at McLean, it was a psychoanalytic bastion. You can't find a psychoanalyst at McLean anymore, or any respectable hospital. It's all drugs and insurance, and people come in, they hardly get talked to, and they just get put on medications and then discharged quickly. And I find that the state of psychiatry today is very toxic. And I think that neuroscience has not resulted in much knowledge or therapeutics. You know, that there is ketamine and there are psychedelics, these might pan out to be important developments, but they seem to have problems I don't know that they're going to revolutionize the treatment of psychiatry.
But a lot of people are using it now, right? Like MDMA. I know John Hopkins is doing a lot of research with MDMA assisted psychotherapy, and then of course ketamine. I've even heard some stories about like DMT. Administered straight and looking at like how the regions of the brain are changing or how people's subjective experiences are changing under the same modality.
Yes, and I don't know of research at McLean. I mean, it might be going on, but I don't know about it with using these substances. To answer your question, I not that I'm aware of, in terms of some secret breakthrough.
Okay, cool. Let's talk about something else. You know, Elon Musk has been talking about like putting a chip into people's brain. He calls it the neural link. What do you think about that? Do you think there is any efficacy of this? Or do you think in the future, like, for example, instead of using the LED lights or using the envelope, we could just plant a chip in our brain and then have like our iPhone as a remote controller and say, okay, stimulate Freddy now and stimulate Fred now. Do you think the future could look like this?
You know, I really don't know how the chip would operate. You know, so the chip would I assume have some intelligence to it, there is a modality called a transcranial direct electrical stimulation.
I've done that.
And if you one side stimulates and the other side inhibits. If you put it on the front, and that's been used to treat depression. And usually they'll stimulate the left side and try and inhibit the right side. And so you can sort of use electricity to stimulate. You probably could use electrical fields. Now, we did some interesting studies with RTMS. So RTMS uses a magnetic field that causes a current in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason that's unknown, they only want to stimulate the left side. The idea that left is good and right is bad is kind of grounded in psychology and neuroscience. So we did two studies that what we find is about that there probably is more people who have a positive left brain, but particularly in people with severe PTSD, there a lot of times their left brain is their negative side.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say generally it's about 60-40, the split. And so you have to test people individually to see which side is their positive side and their negative side. So we did this with a group who were getting TMS, which is a transcranial magnetic stimulation. It's a treatment for depression. And what we found was that if somebody had a negative left hemisphere, they didn't do well with TMS. If their left brain were their positive side, they did well. And we repeated this and got the same results with a one study was at Harvard with at Beth Israel Hospital, a different facility. And I didn't run the study. I just lent them the glasses to test the baseline hemispheric valence. And the other study was done in Canada. But we got the same results, and also there were gender differences that were matched.
Mm-hmm.
So what we found was that if you stimulate with the magnet a negative left brain, you're not going to get a good result. And the results with TMS are mediocre. We had a much higher result in people with a positive left brain who were getting their left brain stimulated. And I tried to convince people to stimulate the right side in those people who have their right side as their positive brain, and no one would do it. And that's how I got interested in the photobiomodulation. I wanted something to stimulate the hemisphere more powerfully. I didn't have to lug up three flights of stairs with a heavy machine. and it turned out that it worked beyond our wildest expectations.
That's amazing. If you ever come to Dubai, just bring it with you and we can test it with a lot of people over here. I'm sure we have a lot of guinea pigs who will say, I want to test it and see how it works. We have a huge community of biohackers and, you know, health people here. This is so fascinating. You know, I have a headset, which is an American company. It's called, blank out on the name. I need some brain stimulation. But the idea is that they have a visor, which has LED lights. And these LED lights are flickering in a certain way, which can get you into the alpha brainwave state. They have a headphone, which has lights, which are going into the ear canal. Blue light at 450 nanometers and red light at 660 nanometers. And they're using Chinese meridian and acupuncture points to get a signal into the brain. The headsets itself has different kind of isochronic tones, binaural beats, and a lot of these other kind of sound technologies. But the most interesting thing that I found was that they found a way to, let's keep it simple, they found a way to induce three sets of sounds at the same time. So one is coming from the left ear, one is coming from the right ear, and then there is a subconscious programming message going on, which could be self-help or, you know, talking about your traumas and how you can release them. But the immediate effect of all the stimulation going in your brain is that if you lie down with lights closed, it'll take you to that delta brainwave state where you're just You feel like you're sleeping, but you're not really sleeping. And then the program is going on for like 25 minutes. By the end of the program, you wake up. If you really went to sleep, you don't remember what's going on, but your subconscious mind registers it. And the more often you do it, then you have a change in your behavior, your perspective, your way of thinking, just because the sounds are going through different, different ear passages. And they say right. that they are stimulating different parts of the brain.
Yes, I think sound does cross over, mm-hmm. and it's not as powerful a neurologic connection as the eyes, but the ears are connected to the opposite brain, and so I think that's really interesting. I'm not aware of that technology, mm-hmm. And it might be that if they did a baseline tests with the envelope that they might reverse the earphones and some individuals and improve their results. I don't know that.
Yeah,
but it's just a suggestion. Yeah.
I would be excited to see like your LED lights with transcranial direct stimulation with the headphones with like a biohacker tech which goes through maybe in the next 2 to 3 years or the next 5 years. Which goes through all of the different entry points and then, has different mechanisms of action and like gets us into an altered state or like a state which is preferable. So I'm excited about that. Hopefully that happens sometime soon.
I have a patent pending on a device that uses music and I play calming music opposite the troubled side.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not as sophisticated as what you're describing,
mm-hmm.
but I have been playing around a little bit with sound, but what you're describing is interesting,
I'll email you the link of the device. They're really big. I'll do that. Okay, Dr. Schiffer, this has been super exciting. Thank you so much for your time. We have covered so many things, and I think people have like a better idea on what dual brain psychology is. If you don't, please read the book. I'm also going to link to his website and some of the other things so you can take a deeper read. But before I let you go, is there anything that you want to share? Any, tips, practical stuff, what you want people to see, what you want people to do? Anything, the floor is yours.
I think that the real breakthrough occurs when you teach, in other words, not tell the troubled side, but get the troubled side to think and say, do you think that you really were a bad child? And get it to sort of have a Socratic discussion with it. And when the little boy or little girl is able to go, aha, I'm really not bad. Or I really don't need to fear the bullies. That's when the person really gets better.
Okay, interesting. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for all the good work that you're doing. Thank you for giving us your time. Thank you for getting on the podcast so early. Before I let you go, my last question to you is, if you could reverse time, let's say we made a technology developed and we put you into a time capsule. You could go back to younger self, but only for like 30 seconds, and you could give back to your younger self one piece of advice. What would that be?
I don't know. I think things have played out. It's just taken too long, mm-hmm. I'm in my 80s now, and I have so much more work to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I wish all this happened faster, but it takes time to make discoveries and especially if you're discovering something that it sounds strange and it's hard to get other people to join in. The other thing that I think happens is there's a line from Shakespeare that says, there is a tide in the affairs of men, which taken at the flood leads on the fortune. And I think if I were researching drugs in the 1980s, it would have been easy to promote myself and promote what I was doing. But this you know, is not supported by any outside flow. I'm the only person working on the hemispheres, and you know, I have colleagues at McLean who work with me, and the NIH has been good to me. And also the U.S. Army is applying for a very large grant to treat depression and combat PTSD with my light. Mm-hmm. But there hasn't been really a stream I'm always swimming upstream.
Okay.
But I don't know how to answer the question, except that I think things have worked out well for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just life, you know, takes time and has its mm-hmm. obstacles.
I guess then the lesson that we can share with everyone is of patience and persistence and believing in what you do. Because yes, you're right, it takes time. Whenever we hear stories of others, we always hear like how fast things have happened, but we don't see those countless million stories which were either unsuccessful, they never got to the place, or it took too much time. Because we are always romanticizing the idea of things becoming fast and instant gratification. A good way to think about it is like, if you want a child, like, you know, you can make someone pregnant, but it still takes 9 months. You cannot sleep with nine people and expect, you know, the baby in a month. Nature and some things have its own time, and the faster you understand it and are at peace with it, at least you won't stimulate the other side of your brain. How about that? How about we close with that lesson? Okay.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. This has been a pleasure for me as well. And this is CJ, everyone, your host, your friend, signing out of the Shift for CJ podcast. Everyone, have an amazing day, amazing week, amazing life. Find a book, find an envelope, try to do this experiment, read his book. And remember, good things in life will take time. Be patient. This is me signing out of the Shift for CJ podcast. Take care, everyone.
Your time and presence with us through this podcast is highly appreciated. If you want to learn more, then head over to our website, www.shiftwithcj.com.